So grateful for this place and for this place and space, right? The opportunity that we have together. As we continue tonight, so we kind of started out last night with talking about true worship, right? Just kind of reminding us what it means to be a true worshiper, the kind of worshiper that God's seeking. And this morning we took a look at, our unique wiring and how God has kind of placed us in this very moment of time. And what I want to do tonight is kind of take us through, I want to talk us through what it means to kind of grow our influence and leadership capacity in whatever seat we're sitting in right now. Some of you would consider yourself a leader. You know, you'd consider yourself a leader, maybe at your church, maybe in your jobs, things like that. Others of you may not even consider yourself a leader, but I want to challenge you. Like, even when I said last night, I said, how many of you are worship leaders? And just a few of you raised your hand. But I would kind of challenge you in that. I think if you're a Christian, then you're called to be like Christ. And if you are called to be like Christ, that means that you are called to be close to the brokenhearted. You are a leader. And you ultimately are a worship leader. Even if you're running tech, you're a worship leader. If you're running lyrics, you're a worship leader. Every role is crucial. You are all worship leaders. And you are all leaders, whatever seat you're sitting in. There are kind of three resources that I used just in studying for this. And one is, there are some great books. Mike Bonham has a book called Leading from the Second Chair, and that's a really good book. And I borrowed from some of that. And Clay Scroggins has one called Leading When You're Not in Charge. And I'd highly suggest those books. They've been great resources to me over the years. Oftentimes when we... when we think about leadership, we often think that we need a title to lead. We need a title to lead. I actually made this mistake when I first started in ministry. When we think about leadership, we think about team captain, student body president, manager, worship leader, lead pastor. You know, fill in the blank with whatever you think it means to be a leader. We assume that once we have a title, people will respect us and follow us. And I made this mistake at my first church. I talked about that little church in Palmyra that I started leading worship at. And all of a sudden, I found myself leading a team of people that were mostly older than me, you know? And I thought, because I was the worship leader, that they would listen to me and follow me, you know? And I remember my 21-year-old self said to them, I'm the worship leader. Why don't you respect me and trust me? I kind of had it out with one of my worship team members, and I remember sitting down with him, and it was a very frustrating conversation, because I just felt like I was kind of always butting heads with him, and that he wasn't willing to receive any feedback from me or instruction or anything like that. And I was going, "What is your problem, dude? You know, like, I'm the worship leader, right? Has anyone else made this, like, felt this way before? Okay, just me. Great." And but anyway, what he said back to me was, he said, respect and trust are earned, not given. Okay, respect and trust are earned, not given. And I really wrestled with this, because I didn't feel like I had done anything to break his trust, right? But I also hadn't done anything necessarily to earn it, other than being hired as the worship leader. and actually, when I look back in that season, I was a bit disorganized and free-spirited. I was picking songs and set lists as the team was arriving for rehearsal. I would forget about meetings with staff and volunteers regularly, or I'd show up late because I was too busy. I leaned far more into my gifts and personality and charm. and I didn't prepare properly. On the other hand, I wasn't supported well either. Instead of providing me with resources and coaching, I was talked about behind my back, and I was questioned by leadership. Honestly, in that season, I almost gave up in ministry. I was like, I wasn't sure if I was cut out to be a leader or not. At LCBC, as I started there, as the interim worship leader, it was a completely different story for me. I was still the disorganized guy, but I stepped into a system that was a little bit more robust. There were better systems, and I was resourced well. When I struggled, they encouraged me. They brought out the best in me and helped me find solutions so I wouldn't keep failing. Our senior pastor, David, I remember one time, called me into his office, and he had a planner in front. Now, you have to understand, this is before cell phones, right? Before Palm Pilots or anything like that, right? Most people don't even know what a Palm Pilot is anymore, right? But this is like back in the Stone Ages. But he had this like a day timer, a planner, a paper booklet that had the calendar in the year. And he said, I went ahead and I filled in the meetings that I know you have for the year in this planner. And then he said, I would encourage you to maybe just take a look at that every night. And maybe think about that for the next morning and set your alarm. That way you can think through, you know. And he very gently helped me find a solution for the problem. And he didn't reprimand me. He didn't yell at me. He didn't scold me. He didn't make me feel less than. Instead, he coached me, right? And he was calling me up to another level. Then eventually I got a Palm Pilot and a laptop. And now my cell phone, and I live and die by my calendar on these things. I need these things to help me be organized. And I definitely started growing as a leader. However, LCBC was and is a high-control environment. Can you imagine being at, like, it's 24 locations. There isn't a ton of freedom, you know, that we have, or a lot of latitude. There's a lot that we have to kind of follow by the book in an organization that big. The reins are held pretty tight. And honestly, at the 7 to 10 year mark of being on staff, I started to feel like I was still viewed as the disorganized 20-something. I felt like I'd grown, but I still felt like I wasn't being respected or given opportunities. I felt like my ideas were dismissed regularly. I felt like I wasn't given freedom in decision-making and wasn't being invited into decision-making tables. It felt like I wasn't being given more leadership opportunities like staff to manage or trips to lead or anything like or events. And there was an important lesson that I learned in that season of ministry. My influence couldn't change until my actions changed. My influence couldn't change until my actions changed. James 2:14-18 says this. It says, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Well, show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You know, I came to realize that I was gifted, I was called, and I had all the faith that I needed, but I wasn't following any of that up with my actions. I knew I needed to make some changes to be more effective and to be taken seriously. One of my problems was that I still do this, so I understand there are pieces of this that are part of who I am. You know, they're part of my personality. But I often will want to be the funny man. I'll make the kind of cheap joke or the funny joke. And what I realized is I was undermining my own self by doing that far too often. I was like always the funny man. I was always making the funny joke. And then I was just too self-deprecating in those things. So that caused people to start to look at me that way. I remember meeting with my pastor, and I asked him to help me see my blind spots. I actually sat down with him, and I said, listen, I'm hitting a wall here as a leader, and I don't want that. I want to grow. I want to find ways to change my influence. And he encouraged me in that, and he told me that the areas that he saw that I needed to work on. And that's hard. That's hard to do some self-reflection, because who likes being told what you're not good at, right? Like, that's not fun. Right? But that's how we grow. That's how we grow, when we allow others to speak into who we're becoming. I remember in that season pursuing ordination. That was one of those things where we used to kind of joke around, and this is one of the self-deprecating things that I used to do. I used to sit in our pastor's office, and he had all these books, And I used to joke around and say, the only books I have are Guitar Player Magazine, you know, and I've only read one of those articles, you know. But it was like, that was kind of always a joke that I would make. Well, you know what? It was like, no, it's time to start reading a little bit more. It's time to start studying and doing the hard work. Instead of just wanting to be called a pastor, the thing was, did I want to be a pastor or did I want to do the things that a pastor does? That's the difference. Do you want to be the worship leader or do you want to do the things that the worship leader does? Does that make sense? That's a different approach. But I began to lead volunteers as if they were staff. I began pouring into the staff around me as if they were mine to lead. I just started leading and I started doing the things that leaders do. And in time, trust was built and more was given to me. I remember at that point, like the other staff, like we weren't considered the worship and arts department. Like we had, I was the worship leader and then there was the production director and then there was the creative person. But we weren't like really a department. But I just started leading these people and we started meeting regularly. And I remember sitting in a meeting one day and our pastor David looked over and he said, well, I really like how Matt has his team organized. I was like, oh, they're my team now. Like, I didn't know they were my team. You know, I was just leading them, you know. But that influence grows over time because trust was built more and more and more was given to me. You can't microwave influence. You can't microwave it. It's a slow process. It happens over time as you grow your leadership capacity and get some wins along the way. See, wars are won and lost one battle at a time. And it takes patience and resilience. I think it's important that we do some self-evaluation. I had to ask myself some questions in that time. Do others come to me regularly for advice? Does my advice and decision-making actually honor those above me? That's a good question, right? Has anyone ever come to you with prayer requests? Okay, I'm going to ask you again. Has anyone ever come to you with prayer requests? But it's really gossip, right? Okay. And are you a listening ear for that person or are you actually directing them the way that would honor the leaders that are above you? Are my motives right? Is my heart pure? Is there something in the big picture that I'm missing? And then I think it's important that we course correct as needed. It's important that we actually take, you know, what's interesting is like when very, very, very rarely do we get off course by like making a major left turn. It's like we just kind of veer a little bit, right? But if you just start to course correct, you're going to get back on the path a lot quicker than you realize. Learn to lead yourself. You can't lead others until you do this well. I think we need to be faithful. Be faithful in the little things. If you're faithful in the little things, you'll be given more. In Matthew 25, it says, his master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. And honestly, as I've been faithful in the little things, trust and respect has grown, and opportunity and influence will always follow faithfulness. They will always follow faithfulness. Over time, I've learned that influence isn't attached to a position or a title. It's attached to a person. People are influential, not positions, right? I'd like for, just for a moment, I bet you've had some people in your life that have been influential to you. And I don't know if they were actually leaders or if they were peers or whatever they were in your life. But I'd love for you just at your tables to take 5 minutes or so. And I'd love for you just to talk about some of the people in your life who've been influential to you. Some people that have maybe influenced, or there are people that you look up to as leaders. And then maybe talk about the characteristics that they have, the traits that they have, okay? But I'd love for us just to look really quickly today at four ways to kind of grow your influence and to grow as a leader. And this is important. I think these are just, and these aren't the only ways, but these are just four ways that I've found to be helpful. And these are the four ways: identify and lift the lid, build trust, serve your leaders, and then don't manage, lead. So let's start with identify and lift the lid. Sometimes the barriers around us are self-inflicted and false barriers. Do you realize that? We end up hitting ceilings that we've actually put in place. They're not real barriers. And I think we have to ask ourselves, is it an actual limitation or is it just my perception? Is it an actual limitation or is it just my perception? And I think the way we figure that out is we ask some questions. Am I meeting or exceeding expectations? Am I faithful in the little things? Do circumstances need to change or does my perspective need to shift? I have often prayed this prayer, God, change this or change me. And guess what he normally does? He rarely changes this. So evidently I'm being changed along the way, right? This often happens. Another question that I ask is, am I approaching things with a have-to or a get-to mentality? Am I approaching things with a have-to or get-to mentality? You know, the work is the same, but the approach is different. Does that make sense? I can either go, man, I have to pick all the songs this week, or I have to do this, or I have to send all the emails out trying to get the team scheduled, or, man, I get to reach out to my team this week. I get to connect with people and help them find out what their gifts are. I get to resource them so that they can use their gifts to serve God. You see the difference between those two approaches? I think another question that's important for us to ask is, who am I surrounding myself with? Who am I surrounding myself with? If you are always the smartest, most gifted person in the room, your potential will always be limited. Will always be limited. If you surround yourself with people who are better than you, they will always push you beyond your current ability. Okay? So let me give you just a quick story from my Berkeley days. Does anyone know anything about Berkeley College of Music? It's one of the best music schools in the world. It really is. And I learned so quickly that I wasn't all that I thought I was when I got there. But they basically rate your improvisational ability from 1 to 8, okay? And the bands that were the 7s and 8s, they were the players, right? They were the ones that you're like, okay, these guys are the top musicians at Berkeley. I came in at around a 3 or a 4, okay? But guess what I did? I auditioned for a big band of 7s and 8s, all right? And they let me in, not because I was good enough, but because they didn't have a bass trombone player. So I squeaked in on the tuba, okay, playing bass trombone parts, all right? And the leader of this band was actually a bass trombone player. So what part do you think he's looking at when, right? So my first day in this class, in this band, I'm sitting there, and these guys are all great players. So he goes, okay, 1, 2, and I'm looking at the music, I'm like, okay, ba, 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 da, ba, ba, ba. I'm good. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. It was double time. Right? And I watched this band play the whole song and then they all ended and I was like, burr. Like I played like one note. It was like it was awful, right? And I just remember the band leader like looking over at me and being like, you know, and I just remember walking up to him at the end of that practice. And I was like, listen, I know I played like maybe 3 notes today, but I'm going to go practice my tail off. And the next time I'm going to play 5 notes, you know, and I did. And I worked so hard. And by the end of that semester, I wasn't as good as them, but I was way better than when I started. You see what I'm saying? Like, you put yourself, and I did what all tuba majors do. I auditioned for the gospel choir. These were the best singers at Berkeley. I was 1 of 3 white people in the gospel choir. And you know what? I couldn't sing like them, but man, I sang a lot better after 2 years singing in that choir. You kidding me? You know, like, when you surround yourself with people who are better than you, you lift your own lid, right? What you need to do is you need to make the ceiling your new floor, right? You need to let that be the new thing that you're standing on as you continue to grow, okay? Once you achieve something, you begin building on that win. All right, let's talk about the next one, build trust. You know, I think it's important when we are leading or when we are under leadership of others that we don't view ourselves as an equal. It's good for us not, like, it's good for me that when I sit down with my senior pastor, so oftentimes I hear worship leaders talking bad about their senior pastors, And I hear them just saying, oh, they just never, like, they just don't get it, and they don't, like, they just start, like, bad-mouthing their senior pastor. And I'm kind of like, well, who do you think you are? It's like, you know, do you have any idea what the weight of a senior pastor is and what they have to carry? Like, you know, do you understand this, the toll that it takes on them spiritually, emotionally, as they're trying to lead the church, the finances, like all of this stuff, right? We need to serve our leaders, right? And like, we have to build trust, and it's important if we just have to understand where we're at on the totem pole first. And I think it's good. Don't think more highly of yourself than you ought, but think of yourself with sober judgment. That's found in Romans 12 as well. There's so much good in Romans 12, guys. There's so much good. I think it's good to define the boundaries of the relationship. Be faithful in the little things. Lead with excellence. Model servant leadership. Matthew 23:11-12 says, "The greatest among you will be your servant. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Serve your leaders well. Hebrews 13:17 says, "Have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. Do this so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no benefit to you." Like when your pastor or when your leader pulls into the parking lot and they see your car, are they excited that you're there? Are they excited that you're there? Or are they like, oh no, like what are they complaining about today, right? Serve your leader. Can they trust you? Can they trust you to lead in their place? Can they trust that you'll lead in a way that would yield similar results to their leadership? You know, before you can lead, you must first learn how to follow. The best leaders are the best followers. John 5:19 says, "The Son can do nothing by himself. He only does what he sees the Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son also does." Man, we need to be following Jesus well. We need to be good followers if we're gonna be leaders. Be loyal. Be loyal. Agree publicly, disagree privately. I'll say that again. Agree publicly, disagree privately. Don't go around with a bunch of prayer requests, right? Like, it's okay to disagree, you know, and I have no problem when my worship leaders or worship teams or anybody come to me and they disagree with something with me. That's okay. But I hope that when we leave that room, they're going to honor whatever decision we made, right? I think that's important. Be willing to forgive quickly also when the leader makes decisions without you. They're going to make mistakes. Leaders are going to make mistakes. So we have to be able to forgive quickly. Help lift the lid of your leader. This is a hard one, okay? Leaders have blind spots too, but these conversations need to be done with respect and with tact. Don't go right to their weakness, okay? Don't go right at the weakness of your leader. Instead, start with vision and ask the right questions. These are some good questions to ask your leader. Where are we going? Where are we going? What will it take to get there? How can I help? Man, I love when people come into my office, they're like, hey, how can I help? What can I do to help you today? Is there anything I can take off your plate that would be helpful? I love when my team asks me that, you know, because that shows me that, man, they're ready. They're desiring more. They're ready for what's next. If you don't already have trust, it's hard to have tough conversations and share their blind spots. So use discernment. And this is a really important phrase that I'm going to share with you. I use this all the time. The right thing at the wrong time is the wrong thing. I say it again. The right thing at the wrong time is the wrong thing. Not every hill is worth dying on. Create a safe environment with those around you and with your leadership. Don't run ahead of them or work around them. And then lastly, don't manage, lead. Being trusted to function in a role is way different than being trusted to lead in a role. Bring out the best in people around you and release them to run. If they can do it 85 to 90% as good as you, let them do it. Then you're going to multiply your leadership, okay? That means, like, we often talk about this with our worship leaders, and that means we're like, give big things away. Give big things away. That means, like, even big worship moments and things like that. Now, there are some that you need to steward as the leader. You know what I mean? It's like, man, no, this is a moment that requires the leader to do it. But there are others where it's like, man, let's give this person a moment to shine, you know, and give them an opportunity to step into this and to grow into this. And then you're going to multiply your leadership. That's what she was talking about over here, right? That succession plan, right? Great leaders are developed, not discovered. Great leaders are developed, not discovered. I actually saw a talk by Christine Kane a few years ago. It was at the Bethel School of Worship. And I'm going to use some of her notes. I took a bunch of notes on that. And I just wanted to share some of that with you because I just thought this one, some of her analogy was so good. So I grew up in a time before cell phones. I mentioned that before. Before cell phones and internet. Right now, if we take a picture of us all meeting here at Spruce Lake and post it on Instagram, someone across the world can see it in seconds, literally seconds. But that wasn't the way it was when I was growing up. When I was growing up, we had, can we pull up the picture real quick? Yeah, we had one of these, right? Anybody remember these? Okay. The good old 3 millimeter, isn't it 3 millimeter? Or 30 millimeter, 35, 64 millimeters? I don't even know. Megapixels? No, that's new. Okay. 35 millimeter cameras with film, right? And you used to have to take this, you'd load the thing with the film, right? I actually see the girl going around taking pictures. She might actually have film. I don't know. Some people are still doing that. But you would have to actually put the film in the camera, and then you would take pictures, and you couldn't see the picture. There was no screen to see what you were taking. You just saw the little, you had to lick a little thing that you looked through, right? Do you guys remember this? You take the picture, and you would pray that it was a good picture. Like, you had no idea if it was a good picture or not until what? You got it developed, right? And what did we have to do to get it developed? You take it to Walgreens or CVS, or right, you take it somewhere and you drop it off, right? And then what would they do to it? They would send it out to where? A dark room, right? They would send it to a dark room because it would go through a process. The film needed to go through a multi-step process to be developed. And the thing is, the reason it went into a dark room is because do you guys know what happens if the light hits the film before it's fully developed? It's ruined. It's destroyed, right? It's exposed. It's ruined. Okay, I want you to listen close. We often elevate people in church leadership because we mistake gifting for anointing. And we put them in the spotlight too soon and they're not ready. You might be sitting here today wondering why God hasn't given you more responsibilities or more opportunities. What if God is more concerned about the work he's doing in you than the work he wants to do through you? I'm going to say that again. What if God is more concerned about the work that he's doing in you than the work that he wants to do through you? I'd love to just read briefly out of 1 Samuel 16. This is the story of David being anointed king. Starting in verse 1, said, "The Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you mourn for Saul, since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I'm sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king.'" And then skipping down to verse 6, it says, "When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, 'Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord.' But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.' Then Jesse called Abinadab and had him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, 'The Lord has not chosen this one either.' Jesse then had Shammah pass by Samuel, and he said, 'Nor has the Lord chosen this one.' Jesse then had 7 of his sons pass before Samuel. But Samuel said to him, 'The Lord has not chosen these.' So he asked Jesse, 'Are these all the sons you have?' There is still the youngest, Jesse answered, but he's tending the sheep. Samuel said, 'Send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives.' So he sent and had him brought in. He was ruddy with fine appearance." I don't know what ruddy means. Do you guys know what ruddy means? Dirty. "He was with fine appearance and handsome features. Then the Lord said, 'Rise and anoint him, for he is the one.' So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. From that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came upon David in power. Samuel then went to Ramah. So David was out in the sheep pen. He wasn't even invited to his own anointing party. Right? He wasn't even invited. You know, his brothers overlooked him. His father overlooked him. Everyone overlooked him. Except who? God. Right? Except God. God knew exactly where David was. And he saw all the potential and gifting in David because he created him that way. And there's something interesting that happens here. Although God anointed David when he was a teenager, he wasn't appointed, right? He wasn't appointed king until he was in his 30s. Why not? What was he doing in those years? He was developing him, right? He was developing character. He placed him in the palace, first of all, to assist Saul and learn palace protocol. The whole time he was learning how to be a king, right? And then he put him in the army to develop him into a warrior and into the type of king people would want to follow. He was developing David for what he'd called him to do. There was a difference between his anointing and his appointing, right? So what does this mean for you? This means that the light in you must be greater than the light on you. Hey guys, would you mind coming as we close? The light in you must be greater than the light on you. Too much exposure too soon will destroy you. Do you understand that? God knows what he's doing and he knows where you're at. If God has assigned you, he will find you. God is the one who ultimately chooses. He is the one who decides when and where. We often mistake visibility for influence. We think that the person up front is the one who has all of the influence, right? But that's not how God, remember what it said in this passage? It said that God doesn't look at the outward appearance, right? He looks at what? He looks at the heart. This is the thing. You will only be satisfied when you are in the lane that God's placed you in. He will give you the grace for the race that you're running. You are not called to be the next so-and-so. You're not called to be the next Steve Garrett. You're not called to be the next, I don't know, Rita Springer. You fill in the blank. God has created you to be you. There's only one you. And the greatest rewards will come in heaven from the things that you do that no one sees. The things that you do in private, who God's forging you to become in the dark room. You remember when I shared my story earlier, my favorite times in worship were spent in those practice rooms in quiet. That's when God was developing, he wasn't developing me into a leader. He was developing me into a worshiper. I was learning to worship him, right? He was forging on the inside what was going to come out. What we forge in dark and in quiet is eventually what's going to come out. God isn't looking for the next big thing. He's doing a new thing. He's doing a new thing. Remember, people look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Don't get distracted chasing everyone else's story and miss the story that God is forging in you. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for these brothers and sisters and for the work that you've done for each of us on the cross. Thank you for the gifts and the passions that you've given each of us. Thank you that you know exactly where we're at. Lord, that you don't need us to try to impress you, that you are pleased with us because of Jesus and because of what he's done, not because of what we could do. All you ask us is to be available, to be open, to be moldable, and to be faithful. And Lord, that's our desire. We want to be open. We want to be available to you, God. Remind us what true worship is. Remind us what it's not. And may we not get caught into the trap of just copying others. May we have an authentic response, heart response to you and all that you've done for us on the cross. We're so grateful for Jesus today. Take us back to where we started. Take us back to the moment that we first understood what it meant to be loved by you, to be forgiven, to be freed. God, we don't want to fall into a cheap imitation of worship. We want the real thing. We want to be worshipers that you are pleased with, God. We want to be worshipers that honor you and leaders that honor you above all things. Let's just continue to